Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for the weekend. And this weekend, we have a special holiday episode of the weekend. And we're going to talk a little bit about different things that might be interested during the holidays, because the holidays are usually the times that, you know, we open up those boxes, we bring down the things, and all of a sudden we find different things that, I didn't know I had this, or where do we get this? But today we are joined by two longtime broadcasters, actually three. And one of them is my co-host, Dennis Wu, but the others are Sam Cassiano and George Reynoso. And George, of course, has always been in the broadcasting industry, and he used to host Oldies Show on KFIM and 92FM, and he is now the proprietor of All That Music, Collector's Marketplace. And Sam, of course, is also the host of the Blue Show on Friday nights here on KTEP. And so we're all family here, and we're going to talk about some of those exciting things. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us here
today. We feel so special today. Thanks for having us down.
You're welcome.
Wow.
And Dennis?
Thank you so much for having us all on this show. This is a special time. George, Sam, as we start into this whole notion of emptying our closets of all this great vinyl that we collected when we were young and impressionable in terms of music and whatnot, you guys wind up with this stuff every day.
Yes.
Every day you wind up with gems and nuggets and then lumps of coal.
How do you, it's kind of like mining for gold. Yes. And I should write a book called Your Records Are Not Gold. At a very basic point, it's basically supply and demand. People buying records, this whole resurgence in records that you've heard about in the last 10 years, is attributable to young people growing up in a wireless world where they didn't have anything physical, tangible to get to. So they now want their favorite artists. They want something to hold and hang on to. And that's how this whole thing started about 10 years ago. But the market for records is really 80% of the buyers are 15 to 35 years of age.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. People 15. That have never experienced records, don't know how to handle a record. I mean, I could go through my pet peeves about having to educate people.
It's crazy.
On record collecting, how to keep your needle clean, buy a quality turntable. But this is a demographic group that's driving the traffic for used records or for recordings. So consequently, people in our demographic group, 55 plus, we've inherited our parents' record collections. We're getting rid of our own stuff. But basically, these kids don't want grandma's records. They want some of them. Occasionally, you'll see a blues or some classic artist on PBS, and it'll generate some interest for them to come in. And Sinatra is one of those artists that, for some reason, it's being collected right now by, you know, 15, 20, 30-year-old kids.
They'll keep the Fleetwood Mac, but sell us the Seals and Crofts.
But generally, yeah, what we call soft rock, the stuff from the 70s and 80s, it's almost worthless. I mean, Carpenters, Neil Diamond, Ann Murray, Sam, help me out here.
We got them all. Reddy.
Helen Reddy.
Dan and John Ford Coley. Yeah, I mean, you could go down the list of all these guys.
Yeah. All those 70s artists.
Typically, right now, the hottest artists that we need that sell to almost all demographics universally is Beatles at the top, Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix, AC/DC, Metallica. There's a Jim Morrison and the Doors, Creedence Clearwater in this market. But everything else is – and it's not that those records are worth so much, because they're not. It's just that they sell. And the problem is that we have as retailers is that everything is driven now by cell phones. So if a record is worth $8 at retail, average market value $8, let's say, these people come in and use their smartphones to shop it and say, well, you know, I'll pick it up for $3 here. I'll pay a little bit of shipping, but I'd rather get it from here. But it doesn't necessarily guarantee that we get the sale. What's happened is that the internet has neutralized all our pricing. So we just can't arbitrarily say, hey, that's a high-demand Led Zeppelin record. Let's sell it for $30. doesn't happen. I already know, we already know, and that's all contingent also on the condition of the record. If it was unhandled, unplayed, untouched, well, that's nice. It may be worth $8 to $12. If it was played, if it was written on, broken seams, ring wear, dirt, dust, whatever, it's just another dollar, $2 record, even though it is something that's in demand that we can sell. But it's just totally neutralized the business of media. And that's actually what we're doing nowadays, is we are the liquidators of media as it comes back into the marketplace after people have passed on. The survivors bring the stuff in and dump it on our lap because they heard records are back, and it's all Montavani, Percy Faith, Herb Alpert, Burt Kampfert, Living Strings. I mean, I could go on and on and on, and we tell people if it's strings, it sings. It just we don't need it, you know. But there's, you know, we already know. We've been doing this for so long. I could, you know, I could just look at a group of records, and it was so funny is that people will come in and tell me the value of their records. And I'll say, are you kidding me? This is what I do all day long. You're going to come in and tell me the value of your records. Okay.
Well. It's not a pretty sight.
Yeah.
It's really an act or an art of diplomacy to let people know exactly what's going on in the marketplace. I mean, we're happy and we're grateful that people bring us your records because, yes, there can be some gems in there, but It's really, you know, we'll tell you, we'll sort it out for you. But in any group of 100 records, we might have 5 or 8 records that we can, you know, that we can use. And if you want to leave the rest of us, the rest of the records, quite frankly, it's going to cost us money to handle them. And we've got to start. Sam, who spends time with us at the store.
I usually end up handling all the excess stuff. And there's a lot of, you know, good stuff. It's just, it's a very, very low market appeal with some of the stuff from the 50s and 60s. Unless we're talking, I mean, even Peggy Lee, I think, sometimes has an appeal. Peggy Lee was a great singer. So, and I think sometimes you'll find a young 20-something who wants to discover those artists like Nat King Cole, like Peggy Lee, like Etta James. They're fascinated by these artists that were considered jazz pop, very, very popular. Sinatra's going to sell all the time. Mm-hmm. They want to discover this stuff because maybe they didn't get it from their parents, but somehow or another, they just sometimes movie soundtracks will pique their interest, and they come in looking for something very special. And I think soundtracks, movies, directors, they're taking advantage of that now, too, with the older music by putting it in their soundtracks.
And by the way, Sam, it might be important to note that we've started pre-packing 25 records for usually less than $10, $3.99, $5.99, $7.99. But we've got it categorized by decades and genres. So if you want easy listening, 25 easy listening records from the 60s, you can buy them for $3.99. 25 records for $3.99. Believe it or not, we've sold like almost 500 prepacks since we started
that. Everything.
Yeah.
Country.
Yeah.
Easy listening. Pop vocals from the 40s and 50s. You name it.
See, I would spend a little bit for like vintage country just because I get into a jag where I want to hear this old stuff from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And so picking up a few albums like that's not going to kill me, you know. Yeah. But the whole catalog, forget it.
Yeah. Well, we're segregating that stuff right now. But 60s country, male, female, $5.99, is it, Frank?
Yep.
Sam?
Yeah, you can call me Sam, too. Frank, if you want to.
So there used to be a thing back in the day called the Schwann's Record Guide. It's kind of like the vinyl version of Kelly's Blue Book. Is that no longer available, or is that no longer relevant?
Yes, everything's live and online, and that's one thing that mistake that people make is they go to eBay and they look at asking prices. So you got to consider, you know, so like sometimes people are offended when we give them a bid that they weren't expecting, and they'll just storm off and say, I'll just sell them on eBay. Yeah. And it's like, you know, knock yourself out. You know, good luck to you. Thank you for letting us look at your records. But what's happened on eBay is that you got a lot of novices selling records that don't know how to price or understand what does it take to sell this record. For instance, if you get a common record on eBay, we already know what not to waste our time with, by the way. But when you put a common record on eBay, you're looking at people selling it for a dollar or selling it for $30 or $50 because they think it's valuable. And so people go look and say, hey, look, they're asking $30 for this record. But, you know, there's 40, 50 people selling the same record in a price range from a buck to 50 bucks and everything in the middle. So what you need to do is go to finished listings and see what it's really selling for. And that's where it's really where the truth really comes to the fore. There's also aggregator sites. There's 4Pay sites that we go to where we pay a subscription to these websites that aggregate and find all this data on finished listings and what records were really sold for. And you have a pretty good barometer of what a record is going to be worth. And a record is not worth anything specifically. I tell people it's a range, and you kind of learn to – you have to study all these sites that give you good information. And you say, you know, that record's about a $30 record, but it's really going to sell probably somewhere between $20 and $50. If you get lucky, you might get 40, 45, but it's always a range. Beatle Records right now, that's the other thing that people don't understand is that, you know, if you bought your Beatle Records in the 80s or 90s, it's a purple label, an orange label, a lime label, or a 90s label, because Beatles music has never been out of print on vinyl. So it's all a question of what edition that you have. And then even if you have a first edition Beatle record from, let's say, 63 to 67, how much was it used? How much did you enjoy it? How much groove wear does it have? Yes, it's about a $20 record, but in this kind of shape, we don't think we can sell it for more than six. So, you know, there's just all sorts of variables that we're really good at because we started out as a record store. We abandoned records for a while, but we came back to it, and now it's really our bread and butter. And another interesting thing is that anything that we've ever sold for big money, I'm talking more than $100, $200, $300 for a physical record, is always something obscure and something exotic. It's something you'd never heard of before. And I've got an eye for that kind of stuff. But it's always – but if you're looking for to sell your Lionel Richie, you think your Lionel Richie and Carpenter's records are worth a lot of money. They're not. You know, it's always something obscure. It's a world market. The internet has just made everything so immediate. And so we're always looking for the obscure and the exotic.
And when we get them, we try not to get excited about it. We tell the customer, oh, this is interesting. And then we'll have to research this. Yeah. We sometimes we just never know what it is. You look at it, the album cover might give you a hint as to what it is. The record label, they do take a lot of research. Because who was the singer from the Platters that you had the other day on 45?
Yeah, on a single. I think we sold it for like 40, 50 bucks.
Mm-hmm. But those obscure singers, they're not many prints were out there, not many pressings.
Which leads me to another question regarding the availability of a certain record. You were talking about Pink Floyd, you know, being a top seller. And yet, consider that the market is flooded with millions of these records out there, whether they're one owner, two owner, five owner records, versus Esquivel, which is like 180,000 pressings, period. So wouldn't that also drive the market as well, the availability of a certain recording?
Absolutely. But you have to remember that Pink Floyd is in vogue right now with a whole new generation that never had a chance to buy it originally. And some of these kids are pretty savvy. They know what's a first edition and what's a reissue because everything's been reissued now. And you can buy a reissue likely for $20-$30. Uh-huh. But you have the used record that can sell for $7 on the used end, but if it's pristine condition, it might be a $15, $20, $30 record.
If it comes with a poster, we're talking.
So the listener
premium
right now would be asking, so what's actually driving this between a first edition and one that was pressed yesterday on something like Pink Floyd?
Well, that's just it. There's a lot of education that's needed. There's a lot of people that are buying music and records because it's kind of a fad. It's kind of cool to be into records. It's kind of like showing your coolness.
It is. It's weird.
And there's kids that, quite frankly, grandma gave them a $120 turntable for Christmas, which is a piece of plastic, and inevitably they'll buy a $30, $40 record. Bring it back and say that it skips, and then we ask them what's the brand name of your turntable, and it's usually the dreaded C word.
You're not even going there.
Yeah.
We know what that is.
Yes, and you know, turntables are the engineering and technology to create sound off of a hard piece of plastic is just, it's amazing. If you really, really want to study what the engineering that goes behind getting sound out of a record, you just cannot do it with a little $75 piece of plastic that you can buy at the mall. And Walmart, Target, Kohl's, I mean, there's everyone selling cheap turntables. And that's one thing I tell these people is just save up. Spend at least $200, $300 on a turntable, especially if you're serious about the hobby. And just absorb information on turntables because it is a lot of fun. It's very rewarding. I mean, I enjoyed it for many, many years.
I still do. Yeah. And these kids, they come in, the 20-somethings. I had a 10-year-old looking for Pink Floyd the other day. I asked him, how much was your allowance? I said, because this may be, you know, this may be up there. And he goes, oh, I think I can probably afford it. I found the Pink Floyd The Wall for him.
Yeah?
It was up there. He took it, but he was ready to get it. Kids, the 20-somethings, they already can recognize the difference between a digital reproduction and the analog. And they're surprised at how much difference there is in a record sound coming through speakers and a digital sound. They can spot it immediately. The digital is too perfect. The analog, you can hear the warmth, the dynamics to it. And there's just something special about that sound that you and I grew up with.
Right.
When the needle hits the record, that little, there you go. I'm home. This is going to be fun. It's going to be an adventure. Plus, you get to you're engaged with the record because you're going to have to get up and change it, flip it over every 20 minutes. Which was another thing, too, back then. Records were only 20 minutes to a side.
Right.
You had to get 40 minutes of really, really good music out. Otherwise.
So while we're talking about recorded media, there is a buzz around our kids at the station about picking up cassette tapes again. Cassette recorders are back in vogue. Our boss has already told us, no, you can't have the new TIAC recorder. And it's like, well, why not?
I don't get it. I think it gets because actually the integrity of a cassette tape is just it's going to degrade in time, and I can't imagine why you would want something that's vulnerable and susceptible to age and wear and parts. And we're selling 8-tracks for God's sake right now. I'm kind of limiting the space that we allocate to it.
Uh-huh.
But I think it just gets back to this idea that kids want something physical to hang on to because they're living in a virtual world right now. And if they appreciate their artist or are into a certain kind of lifestyle, they want to be able to connect with this music. They want that physicalness to it. And I that's what I get from it. But
I think it brings them together. Their friends like to get together and bring their records over. You remember carrying all your records around to your friend's house? Hey, what do you got? Put something on the turntable. You're playing DJ tonight. So they'll take their records over to their friend's house. One thing you need to remember is don't loan your records to anybody because you won't get them back. But they do that. They have these little record listening parties. Look what I got today. Well, let's put it on. Who's going to put it on? Who's first? You put it on.
All in all, it's a lot of fun. I mean, we complain about all the stuff that we got to go through to try to make it in business, but we know what we're doing, and it's fascinating to me to see how technology, the internet, how all that has affected what we have to do to stay in business and just give people good service. By and large, it's older demographics, people over 50 plus that still want a physical CD. And CDs, by the way, I believe in about 5 to 10 years will be going the way of the album. There won't be any more CDs. It's already tough to find a CD if you don't get it really quick. Yeah. But people that want physical media can right now find a lot of deals right now in the marketplace.
So do you think VHS tape is coming back?
I don't think so. We've got a hard time getting rid of it. The only time a VHS is worth anything is if it was never issued on a DVD. And if it's got some sort of cult allure about it.
Okay.
Otherwise, no. VHS is not there.
Okay, so that begs the question, though. If vinyl translates to that whole thing of it's worth a little bit more because it was never issued on CD, why isn't VHS following that same line of logic?
I don't know. It could be distribution. Video is more prone to cable and wireless, and it's there are some movies that have a cult following. Uh-huh. Those movies are always worth a little more. But by and large, it's now a streaming, wireless, cloud world where you can watch anything on demand.
Yeah.
And a lot of younger people or people that aren't familiar with our world come in and say, why would anybody want to buy a CD or a record? Or it's just you can tell it's this place is not for them.
Right.
And there's a whole contingent of consumers that are in that camp. But so we don't pretend to be anything we're not. We're, you know, if you enjoy physical media, we'll do the best we can to locate it for you or offer you a fair price on it if it's here. And we're also a locator service, so we'll find it for you. But it's a changing world, I'll tell you that. It seems like every 2 years we've got to adjust the business model. And this all started in the year 2000, which was the peak year for physical media. Right after 9/11, 2001, the world just totally changed, and it's just been disrupted in a lot of ways. And you talk to other industry sectors, people in other industries, and we're all kind of fallen prey to what technology is doing to our world, to our lifestyles, to everything. Politics, I mean, just everything. It's all based around information and immediacy of information.
Breaking news?
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's been happening for this last month or so. Uh-huh. Every day is a breaking news day.
Yeah.
So this whole trend at 2000, you can actually we were having a conversation before the taping started about a book that you suggested we read that was detailing the crash of the music industry somewhat in 1980.
Mm-hmm.
So can we pin this whole notion of upheaval to that particular period?
You're talking about Hitmen?
Yeah.
The book was called Hitmen. Frederick Dannen chronicled the demise or the crash of the music industry in large part because the industry had invested so heavily into disco music, which was a passing fad at that moment. But what I remember was the MP3 revolution.
Uh-huh.
And downloads. And I thought I didn't really know what to make of it. I thought it was a little offensive that, you know, people walking around bragging that they downloaded all these songs free of charge.
From Napster, exactly.
Yeah. And so that, you know, downloads now is an old term. It's not even used hardly anymore. It's a non-issue. But I remember all this disruption, and that's an internet revolution phenomenon, the MP3 thing that kind of started. Actually, if you want to really go back, it started with CD burners in computers, when that started becoming standard equipment. We used to take our records and put them on tape.
No.
Remember?
Wow.
Well, and then computers started coming with CD burners. And then the MP3 revolution started, and cell phones and the new distribution models now for music, streaming now. And I have a streaming project that if you look at the revenue that's coming in on that, it's fractions. It's in the hundredths of a penny for every download. So a record executive told me once that they see music now as pixels on a screen. You got, you know, so many millions of pixels, and you can't sell a couple of hundred pixels and make any money. You have to sell millions and millions of streams to 0.0043 cents per stream, and you get this little income check that comes to your checkbook for, you know, $45 for.
That's kind of like
so
what the Beatles signed. Their first contract was for exactly that, and it was fractions of pennies.
Yes, yes, and it's a volume world, and of course, at another level, you've got all this infrastructure of corporate guys that have got the technology that are pooling all this together and tying it in with advertising revenue and wherever else they can make it. I don't know. It's just a little bit too much for me. I'd just rather stick to evaluating people's record collections and do the best we can. We got another 2 years on the lease, by the way. So I'm just kind of wondering, you know, it's like, how do I transition from this, or what do I want to do? So it's kind of a fun time to challenging and fun and bunch of other things, and just fascinating, but it gets tougher and it gets more challenging. And like I said, it's just an interesting world to see where all this is headed.
So my last question to the both of you, Sam and George, what are, in your collection, what's your favorite vinyl you'd never get rid of?
Oh, my God.
Wow. It would have to be something that I've hung on to, I guess, for...
You know, for me, and I'm not going to answer you specifically, but I will tell you that music is very, very personal. For me, it's a great lyric or a lyric that I can relate to at some point in my life, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, that grabbed me and held me. Mm-hmm. And it's more the song or the artist. I collect Dave Clark 5, which is British Invasion. I don't know why it's still sitting in my closet, but
that's all awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Well, the first record I ever heard was a 45 of the Beatles with Tony Sheridan while I was stationed with my father in Germany in 1963.
Wow.
The record had just come out. America hadn't even heard of the Beatles yet. Not
it's
until
on Polydor.
It was one of those really odd labels, but it was a 45 of the Saints and yeah. My Bonnie. Don't know what happened to that 45, but that's the first 45 I remember hearing. If I still had it, it'd be great. Still have Rick Nelson Sings For You and an old Neil Sedaka. That my mom was a big pop music fan, so we got into that stuff.
Still yeah, one thing I learned, Dennis, is that music is personal. You cannot make a judgment on anybody for purchasing whatever you see them pick up, and I learned that lesson a long time ago. Mm. I have a lot of favorite songs. That means something personally to me. They wouldn't mean anything, I don't think, to anybody else.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our producer, Lauren Terrazas, my co-host. Actually, I'm not going to say my co-host because you did host it today.
Okay. Let's just go ahead and close this out by saying thanks to our friends who came in to do all of this all at one time. George Reynoso, Sam Cassiano, Louis Sines, I'm Dennis Wu. Thank you so much for joining us on The Weekend.
Support for local production of The Weekend on KTEP comes from the estate of Maxie Templeton.